I'm Chris Mandel, director of the Sedgwick Institute, and welcome to this installment of the Sedgwick Institute Live, where I profile influential thought leaders who make a difference and whose interests lie in the risk and insurance world. Today, I'm talking to Lori Solomon, recently retired head of global risk management for Coca-Cola since 2005. With over 25 years in the industry, Lori has a wealth of knowledge, making Coke one of the higher performing global risk management programs. Welcome, Lori.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you. Thank you for spending a few minutes with us today.
Sure.
So let's start with the personal, as I always like to do. Tell me about your family and what you like to do in your new post-Coke life.
Well, I can first say that all's well with my family. My parents live in South Florida, so I'm very happy to say that they weathered Hurricane Matthew without terrible incident. They were very lucky.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. In the few months since I left Coke, I've been able to do some pleasure traveling, some visiting of friends and family, and about a million projects that I never thought I'd get to. So I've actually been pretty productive.
Home-based projects type, that type stuff?
Yeah, stuff here and stuff for friends and with friends. And it's actually been a really, really nice time to just have some downtime. It's been 30 years since I got to do that, so I really appreciated it.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of that, I saw that you've actually hung a shingle, as I like to say, and
yep.
Look like you have your own consulting firm now, so that's part of your new life as well, right?
Yep, that's very true. That's very true.
Is that? Tell me about that just a little bit.
Okay, well, I decided to step out into the world of risk management consulting after all my time in the industry between Travelers, insurance company of 10 years as an underwriter, and then Coke for another 20 after that. I really wanted to give a shot to doing something to help other risk managers. And so I kind of would like the opportunity to advise, to consult, to give other risk managers some of the benefit that I've had during the course of all my time at Coca-Cola. Sharing what I can with them and really helping them along the way. I just think that there's so much going on now in our industry, and so many people are trying to do more with less that I'm hoping I can be a great resource or counsel for some of the risk managers or even really the brokers.
Mm-hmm. Well, good. I'm sure that'll be very successful.
I've
been there, and it's kind of fun, actually.
Yeah,
so
I'm trying to give it a try.
I know you mentioned Travelers as an underwriter, so I assume that's where you started. But I mean, what actually led you into risk management?
Well, I was at Travelers nearly 30 years ago. I started my career and was a national accounts underwriting trainee there. Ultimately, became an assistant director and was responsible for bringing all the service delivery to my accounts at Travelers. I had a book of business. It was an excellent place to start. And after 10 years of Travelers, I was ready for a change in looking to relocate and see a different side of the business. And I think that my intention originally was to pursue connecting with one of my major broker partners from my Travelers days. And when I contacted the broker, he encouraged me to send in my resume and get connected with their hiring office and HR manager, which I did. And after speaking with that person a number of times, she ultimately introduced me to a recruiter who was looking to place a role with the Coca-Cola company in Atlanta. So I was really neither looking for Atlanta per se nor risk management, but sometimes the best laid plans, you know, it sort of goes as it's supposed to. And I found myself here in Atlanta working for the Coca-Cola company. Was a fantastic chance to get to know a really big known brand name and some of the real issues that big companies like that deal with. So it held my interest for the full 21 years that I was at Coca-Cola. I felt like I was never bored.
Wow. What position did you come into it as?
When I started at the Coca-Cola company, I think my title was something like underwriting manager. Mm-hmm. And I was responsible for all of the domestic U.S. insurance coverages for the Coke company. After that, I sort of graduated into more of the international coverages, working with the captives, the property placements, and eventually in 2005 became the director of the global group.
Mm, very good. You know, I just was reminded, when, I don't know why I didn't think about this, but you don't, or do you know that I used to be with Pepsi, that arch rival?
I did know that.
Probably shouldn't have mentioned it, you know, but we were told if we drank Coke, we'd be fired, you know.
So. You know,
I'm sure they told you the same thing.
I don't know if I ever officially heard that, but it seemed to be just an understood concept.
Yes, indeed. Well, that's business for you. So, you know, after all these years in the insurance and risk world, what do you consider your most significant accomplishment so far?
Well, you know, I had a lot of wonderful and extremely varied experiences at the Coca-Cola company, and I think that that's the reason that I really loved my role there and the company. I think that probably my most significant was to pull together the insurance programs, the risk management departments, and the overall risk strategy of two mega Atlanta-based companies, which was the Coca-Cola company and the separate independent owned bottler, Coca-Cola Enterprises.
Same thing happened at Pepsi, now that I think about it. You know, I wasn't directly involved in the bottling operations or the distribution of Pepsi, but I was in the restaurant operations. But that company went through a number of major changes over time, you know, acquisitions and spin-offs, and really made life interesting, frankly, from a risk standpoint.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this project for me started in 2010 when the Coca-Cola company bought North American operations of CCE for $12 billion. So mm-hmm. It was the largest acquisition certainly in the history of the Coca-Cola company. And then this process continued actively at least for the next 5 years, which took up most of my time these last 5 years. And in that time, my group successfully combined everything, really, the people, the systems, the insurance structure, the financing, the claims management. You know, we were able to totally change the increasing trajectory of loss costs together by a lot of the work that we were able to do.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
Yeah.
Very good. So, you know, there's a lot of talk about and evidence of change in our discipline, especially in the last 10 years. Do you have any thoughts on where it might be going?
Well, I think there's no doubt that everything is moving to technology, data, and analytics. Risk managers will have success, in my opinion, if they're able to make the big move towards really making better sense out of more information in a way that reduces overall cost and bolsters the bottom line. It's easier said than done. I mean, there's an awful lot of information and data in our industry, and I really think that success will come to those who are able to utilize that to their mm-hmm. best benefit.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I always like to say, how do you get the best and right information to the right people at the right time? Sounds simple, but it isn't necessarily.
It's definitely not. Definitely not. But I think that's just the focus of so many people and industries right now is how do we deal with this amazing amount of data and information that we have and use it for good, because it's out mm-hmm. there and it's useless unless we can put it to work for us.
Mm-hmm. Couldn't agree more. So what are your thoughts about how to be successful in business? Maybe you can narrow it to the risk and insurance world or not, but I mean, what's your secret to success for all those youngsters that may be listening?
Well, I think that the risk and insurance industry is an amazing industry and profession. I mean, there are virtually unlimited areas of specialty and connection to this world. I think what I would say to most young people is that you can't make a mistake in deciding upon your first or even your next role that you just start somewhere and grow knowledge and expertise from there, that there's value and opportunity on virtually any side of this business, whether it's the insurance sales side, the risk management purchasing side, the brokerage side, the consulting side, and definitely the service roles side too. You know, each of those add immeasurably to this industry, and I think that all of them, all of those component pieces are going to be really challenged as we go on to continue to add value in a way that becomes really quantifiable and identifiable for this industry. There's a lot that's changing.
I'm sure you're like me, and I don't remember what you got your degree in, but you know, mine was in business management. I was originally going to go into retail, but got kind of moved off that trajectory for reasons beyond my control. But so many people I know in the discipline, you know, had no intention of going into it. They had everything from English degrees to, you know, finance MBAs and everything in between. So it doesn't seem like educational foundation is all that important necessarily, other than doing well in school, you know, to succeed in risk management and insurance.
Yeah, I agree with you an awful lot. I do think that a lot of the primary key success factors, there's information that you get from school, and I think everybody says that. Obviously, it's important. That gives you an incredible intellectual background. But there are some skill sets that I feel like are the ones that really generate success. These are the people that are willing to spend the time, put in the work, learn the trade, and then really know how to solve problems with the data and information that they have. Get to know the people, talk with the people, work with people. You know, it's not, I don't know that there's an unusual secret formula for that kind of success, and I suspect that that's similar to other industries too. But in our industry, at least up till now, from my vantage point, my schooling background served me well, which really was not directly focused in the risk management arena. But the key for me was I in school learned how to read, to write, to communicate, to boil down a simple idea, to ferret out the facts from fiction. I mean, those are really the key criteria, I think, to being able to communicate and solve a problem.
I think that's right. And, you know, I think the real issue, as we found and others in our space, is to, you know, how do you attract people into your company, whether it's, you know, what we do or what risk managers do or insurers. You know, it's not the first choice on most undergrads' list, as I think we all know. So that becomes the challenge.
Yeah, I think that the benefit of this industry for those who have the foresight is there's so much change that's going on that you know, we talk about disruption in industry, and certainly it's all about information and putting information to good use right now. And there is nothing that this industry has more of than data and information. It's a hugely currently regulated industry. There's amazing amounts of information that's kept and tracked. And it just astounds me the power that one could really achieve if we're able to really use that in an intelligent way to make a big difference.
And the good news is so many young people really seem to understand how to use at least the technology that is used to manage the data. If you can transition from being a whiz at the technology to actually knowing how to dig deep and wide and get out of data what you need to make good decisions, I think you could be gold.
It's a jackpot.
Yep. So I have to ask about our space, which is the third-party administrator, you know, claims management, productivity management world. Any thoughts from your perspective as a long-term risk leader about the importance of TPAs in doing risk management well?
Well, you know, my experience has shown that TPAs are a critical component to overall risk management success. That was my experience. While I was at Coca-Cola, my primary objective was to reduce the overall cost of risk, plain and simple. And probably 85% of that overall cost came from actual loss costs that were retained by the company. So, you know, the only way to achieve a reduction in loss costs was to ensure that the actual operations of the Coca-Cola company, the professionals in my risk management group, our broker partners, and definitely our TPAs, were all focused on the same key objectives and metrics, We all knew the game plan. We all needed to stay on the same path. And then we all benefited if we won together. But we had same objectives that were constantly monitored by all of those parties. Each party had a very critical role in making the job work.
Yeah, it's funny. I was talking to an executive in this industry the other day. I won't name him or the company, but he said there was a well-known executive in the TPA world who was famous for having on his office wall some sign, or maybe it was framed, I don't know, that said, "It's the loss cost, stupid."
Perfect.
Yeah, it says it all, doesn't it?
You know, it's amazing how much time I feel like risk managers focus on negotiating the hard costs, which are important, of insurance and fees. But in retrospect, I mean, comparing total cost of risk, there's no doubt that 85% of that is the loss cost. And if it's totally disempowering to think that's just the cost of doing business and you can't do anything about it. I mean, I feel strongly that you can.
Absolutely. So, you know, there's a lot of talk these days about what they call national conversations around the work comp system. Lots of stakeholders, particularly employee advocates, the plaintiffs bar and others, are saying the system's broken. There's evidence that Washington is interested in the possibility of federalization. Option legislation is being pushed from different quarters to take what's known as non-subscription in Texas into other places. I wonder if you have any thoughts about the work comp system and its need for change, or maybe whether or not it's just a lot of hyperbole.
Well, I feel like the workers' comp system is one that's been in place for a long time, and there's definitely an ongoing challenge to the workers' comp world. And you're right, you mentioned an awful lot of changes that are going on and shifts that are happening today. There's no doubt that there's a lot of question mark around what will the Affordable Care Act look like? What is the continuous relationship between maybe the Affordable Care Act and workers' comp? Is there cost shifting that's going on between the at-home side and at-work side of the equation? Are companies going to be able to successfully pull together medical management across the spectrum? I think these are real questions that are going to continue to be asked, because cost continues to increase. The options change, like you say, in states like Texas or and others who have started to look at this idea of opting out of the workers' comp world. But there is a real issue about the hugely differing costs by state, the increasing prescription costs, the upcoming election. You know, I've read about how large claim frequency may be coming down, which is great. Let's, you know, think about the workers' comp world and our TPAs and best practices really taking root. But at the same time, severity seems to be increasing in a lot of cases, and that's just not sustainable. Something's got to give. So, you know, in a world where all systems are being considered and reconsidered for efficiency, I think the workers' comp world has to be ready for some changes. I can't imagine anybody thinks it's just going to stay the same.
Yeah. No, it is true. Frequency is dropping, has been for a number of years, although ironically the proportion of cases that are fraudulent or suspected fraud is actually rising. So that may be indicative of the current economic conditions that we're operating under.
It's a real problem, and it's a struggle for companies who are able to look at their data and actually see those trends. You know, for those who are able really to discover that, and we had seen those kinds of things when I was at the Coca-Cola company. There's a real effort at getting to the bottom of what's happening there, but it's not an easy fix, and there's real question marks. I agree with you as to whether there'll be federal involvement here or not.
Very good. So let's take it up a notch to the broader industry. Let's call it the PNC industry. You know, there's all kinds of evidence of disruptors occurring, whether it's Google getting into different aspects of the insurance world. There's evidence that Amazon, even Microsoft, is moving in that direction, looking for ways to play in the space and make money. What's your view of the future of the industry and the current disruptors that are emerging?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's amazing to me. I was at a conference, a wonderful conference that I used to attend of a peer group that I participated in. And during the time of that conference, we saw a demonstration of a drone, which I had never seen before. And the conversation, it was all about disruption and innovation and just how that would take hold of this industry as well as so many others that we're seeing today. And like I said, I mean, here's an industry that is just all about data and information. And it just seems to me that if you can harness that, decisions and process will change dramatically. So it's not surprising that firms like Google and Amazon and the ones that you're referencing, which are the ones that are on the forefront of using information and culling together data, they're the ones that really come to mind here. Process has to change. The insurance industry needs it and is really calling for it. It's amazing to me that it's rare to be able to manipulate information or even see it visually in a way that you can see charts and graphs on your Apple phone or your iPhone, you know, your cell phone. So I do feel like there's a lot of opportunity in the P&C industry. It's going to be disruptive. It's probably going to take a lot of adjustment for folks in our generation and those even older than us to sort of reassess and reacclimate, but it's got to come. It's really necessary in this industry.
Yeah, I think the efficiency question is going to be a tough one for years to come. I mean, when I actually started in the claim business myself, and I remember the fairly big transition within the first 10 years that I was in from, you know, being a field investigator with a company car on the road 4 days a week to somebody who was asked to, you know, do everything behind a desk except by exception. And that's more the current model. So it makes staying in touch with people a bigger challenge. But in fact, that touch point, you know, that ability to show empathy and really treat claimants not so much like claimants but like consumers is kind of where we think we need to be in order to thrive in the future, in addition to figuring out more efficient ways to do things, you know.
I definitely agree with you. I mean, I think that, you know, it really goes back to what we started to talk about earlier about some of the most important success points, you know, what really creates some success. And I just feel like, again, those who stay keenly focused on solving problems are going to be the leaders of the industry. And there are plenty of problems still to solve in the P&C industry.
That's for sure. Well, and if you look at the amount of money, you know, coming out of the M&A world that's wanting to invest in different segments of the insurance world, particularly insurance technology, it validates all of that. Absolutely.
Yep.
All right, Laurie, well, is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners today?
No, just thanks for the opportunity to have the conversation. It's great to keep your head in the game and think about really sort of where some of these pieces and parts are going. I'm hopeful I can be of assistance to some of my risk manager colleagues as we go on from here.
Very good. Well, thanks, Laurie, for taking the time and for sharing your insights. It's been a pleasure talking to you today.
Great.
To our listeners, you can find these conversations, including this one with Laurie, posted at SedgwickInstitute.com, as well as my speaking and writing schedule, as well as that of Dr. Richard Victors, our senior fellow at the Sedgwick Institute. Please consider joining the Institute's LinkedIn group titled Sedgwick Institute, where we dialogue daily on issues of importance to stakeholders in the risk and insurance world. Till next month, when we'll have our next installment of SI Live, and I'll be interviewing Tom Perry, CEO of the Integrated Benefits Institute. In the meantime, I urge you to use your expertise and influence to make a difference whenever and wherever you can to make this industry better. So long.